previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
What's my name?
David S. Pumpkins!
Any questions?
Yes! Several!
This is the Extra Hot Gray Podcast, episode 134 for the week of November 7th, 2016. I am Love Toilet David T. Cole, and I'm here with Charles Rocket Truther, Sarah D. Bunting.
Fuck this.
One A-hole, Tara Ariano.
Babe.
And Digital Short, Omar Gallega.
It's my dick in a box.
Hello, welcome back after a week off. Do we want to talk about the week off that we took?
Well, we didn't do an episode on that week off.
No, we did.
That's
not.
For sure.
Nope.
Yeah, our apologies. Shit just happened.
Yep.
Well, hopefully in the fullness of time, we can, you know, tell you the horrible story. One of us lost a limb.
Another one gained a limb, which was weird.
Yeah.
I know, it's really awkward, guys. Yeah.
But we're back now. And while we're doing this sort of thing, I will say I think minis will be back next week as well. So
yes,
hopefully next week we'll be back to full power
and
full steam ahead. More dogs,
extra limbs,
more dogs, shoveling in the dogs.
Yeah, normally we announce when we're taking a week off, but I think each of us thought the other had done it, and then people on Tuesday were like, "Is there an episode today?" And then we were like, "Whoops!"
I usually do that, so that's my bet.
Sorry. Anyway, enough about the past. Let's look ahead to the future, I guess, or the present of what we're doing today, which is to talk about Saturday Night Live with Omar Gallega. Welcome back, Omar.
Hey. Hi, Omar.
Yay!
Thank you.
Omar, of course, covers Saturday Night Live for us at previously.tv. And I figured this would be a good one for this week because we're recording this, of course, on election eve. And SNL is always a big part of the election coverage every 4 years. People, I think, that don't normally even watch that much might tune in to see the coverage of it. Omar, how do you think it has been so far this season politically?
I think the election stuff has been surprisingly good because I think 4 years ago, there weren't as many other competing humor outlets doing as much as they're doing. You know, it feels like there was one election, one debate that was on a Sunday night and they had to do a sketch like the following Saturday.
Yeah.
And that's a long time. And they were still able to find some good jokes in there. So I feel like the political stuff has been pretty strong there. You know, Alec Baldwin as Trump has been outstanding. Kate McKinnon has been outstanding. The Bernie Sanders stuff from late last season was really good.
Yeah.
They've been pretty good this season. I mean, there hasn't been, something like the year when they had Ross Perot and George Bush Sr. Like that was an amazing time to be doing election stuff. But I feel like if they've held their own and it's been pretty good. It's generally been the highlight of most of the episodes so far this season. Mm-hmm. Not this week, I didn't feel, but
yeah.
But yeah, generally pretty good.
Well, let's talk about the sketch that they... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Dave.
Counterpoint.
Yeah.
I find the political sketches this year to be of that very tired internet joke, which is House of Cards ever going to, you know, seem weird again because this election cycle has been so crazy. I feel like they were basically reenacting the debates on their skit. There wasn't on their sketches. There wasn't a lot different. I didn't actually think they added much to what was going on.
Well, sometimes they were like just verbatim things from the debate because that's how
like,
insane
like the
been.
Debate was so like this whole situation is so fucked up and so surreal and so movie like that I don't think they actually could add that much that was funny on top, or people like weren't ready to be having a lot of humor added to that. You know what I mean? It's like just a weird situation because people know that this is bonkers crazy, but they're just exacerbated by the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I really think those skits actually brought that much into it. Sorry, sketches.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, to Omar's point, like when I look back at the Saturday Night Live that I never missed back in the late 80s, early 90s, and the fact that Dana Carvey's Bush One, but like began to influence, like it was more of a takeoff on the president, but then it started to seem like the president was like trending towards the imitation more. Like he had more of a Texas accent. He started like playing it up more. And I think he acknowledged that at some point. And, cause he was like, this version of me is apparently fairly lovable.
Yeah.
But that was a long time ago before the internets. And when you think about, to Omar's point, like all the different memes that are born, live and die in the time between when Trump does something outrageous and when this gets on the air, I think their only choice is to like do a straight imitation, which I think they're like Alec Baldwin is amazing. Like that lip pull down he does, I thought it was really great. On the other hand, I seldom watch it anymore unless we're talking about it here. So
I feel like Kate McKinnon has found some pockets of humor where I don't think Hillary Clinton is an easy person to make jokes of. Like she doesn't lend herself to parody as much as Trump does, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think Kate McKinnon has found little pockets of humor, little mannerisms, little things that she can tweak in the same way that Dana Carvey did back in the day. Like I feel like she's doing that really, really well and finding humor where, you know, that you're not seeing in memes and other places all over the internet.
Yeah, I thought her best was of the debate sketches was the town hall one where she did, I'm going to attempt a casual lean, and then was like super stiff. That's the kind of thing that I think Kate McKinnon has really brought to the Hillary impression, because you're right. She doesn't have any like strange mannerisms or even an accent particularly. Like, I mean, she kind of has a Chicago accent, I guess. But yeah, it's harder to I think she's more in the vein of like finding the essence of her as a person and sort of doing that as opposed to really caricaturing her.
They didn't do all those extra primetime episodes this time around.
No,
either.
They didn't.
Yeah.
I forget if they did in 2012.
Although there
either.
Was one. Wasn't there one on Saturday, this past Saturday?
There's one tonight, I think.
But I think it's, I don't think it's new. I think, is it?
Right. Yeah,
I think it's just like a compilation of old stuff. It's not like when they had the like 9:30 on Thursday episode.
Right.
That was only in 08. I forget if they did that again in 2012.
I think the Tina Fey as Sarah Palin was one of them, I bet, last time. Yeah. Or was that the time before that? I guess that was 8 years ago. How time flies.
I know.
My goodness.
Oh, by the way, I should add at this point, I'm a little bit high.
How time flies for Dave.
On totally legal prescription drugs.
The listeners don't need to know.
Yeah, I think they do, because I'm already feeling like I'm drifting.
All right. Let's keep it on point then. Let's talk about the episode that just aired, which is the Benedict Cumberbatch episode, the fifth episode of the season. It was really just the kind of the one sketch that was political. Let's just do that segue into it with that. And Omar, in your write-up, you called it cathartic. I sort of see your point, and I know what they were going for. It's a thing where, you know, in the cold open, it started with Trump and Clinton doing their usual thing in an interview with supposedly Aaron Burnett from CNN, and then both of the actors just drop character because they're so sick of like being so ugly all the time, and then they go to a film segment in Times Square. So talk about what you thought of it, because I think I don't agree with you, but go ahead. I'll let you go first.
I did say cathartic, but I didn't mean that necessarily as funny.
I see.
I did not think it was not my favorite sketch. I mean, I didn't put it as my favorite sketch of the night by far. It was just been, like you said, I see what they were trying to do. They were trying to kind of get some feel good and try to kind of raise us out of our bummer mood as a nation. And to the degree of whether that was successful or not, I mean, I thought it was fine. I thought it was cute. I didn't think it was particularly funny. And, you know, just going out in Times Square and hugging random people and, oh, look at this weird guy. Let me hug him anyway. It wasn't particularly strong or funny or making a point. It was just really trying to like, we know you're tired of all this and so are we. And let's just do something out of the studio.
Yeah. I mean, people that I follow on Twitter were like, it made them cry. And I am a huge crier, but I was like, that really? I don't know.
In the sense that we're all extremely frustrated with the historically too slow editing and pace of these sketches sometimes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, it was fine. I wasn't mad at it, but that was a, I saw that reaction on Twitter and I was like, are you sure you don't have something in your eye? Because
yeah,
I thought like the Tom Hanks, the Black Jeopardy sketch from a few weeks ago was way smarter, way more on point. And like, okay, that's something I have not seen or heard before and completely on point.
Yeah, I agree. That was, I think that was my favorite political sketch of this season. And it didn't have any of the players in it. I agree with you 100%. I thought it was so smart and so well done. Sarah, that cold open was your first, your entree into this episode and the first full one that you've watched in a while. How did it make you feel about how, what was ahead of you for the next 90 minutes?
Well, again, I am a vet of Saturday Night Live and there's a reason I don't watch it anymore. I think actually I could go back to it now that we live in an age where you can just fast forward through everything that you don't like, which I did. Like in the 80s, I guess conceivably you could do that, but you needed to be like watching it so you could talk about it with your friends at church the next morning. So this was fairly typical that I was like, this is funny. Now it's going on too long. And that's kind of how I felt about a lot of the skits, that it was like, I understand the logistics of Saturday Night Live. I read the oral history. I get it. But, you know, like, it's not for me. Like, I don't have that attention span for it anymore. And I felt like this episode was weird in a way that was not just me not being accustomed to watching it. Like,
It really was.
I agree. As someone who does watch it every week, it was a weird one. The fact that the sketch after, first of all, the monologue, which like enough with the songs, I feel like that's such a crutch that they do. And I know it's something that they particularly bust out for, hosts that are maybe not, you know, super A-list well-known people outside of like the art house world, like with Benedict Cumberbatch, but I feel like the song is such a lazy device to do. Dave, what did you think?
You still here, Dave?
I actually, to be perfectly honest, I was staring at some leaves outside of my window, just watching them wave back. And
I was
forth.
Actually doing that during the song, and then I just fast forwarded it. Like,
For this, the only episode that stuck with, or the episode, the only sketch that stuck with me was the 1984 toilet.
which was product placed probably.
Yeah, yes. The Kohler cool toilet thing. Oh, that was cute. Mm-hmm. But you know, the issue with Saturday Night Live, and we've said this before on this program, I'm not a big Saturday Night Live guy, but like the further we get into, you know, the era of the internet and the era of like 30-second things where, you know, the joke has to come very quickly, or the, you know, and the premise and everything, and even including like how much faster paced just regular sitcoms are now on television. When you compare it to like, you know, kind of the JPM, the jokes per minute on Saturday Night Live, like sometimes Saturday Night Live seems like the slowest comedy on television.
Yeah.
Or at least the most drawn out.
Yes.
And I think last time we were talking about Key and Peele in the same episode, you're like, wow, there's just no comparison. Like, you know, like gun to my head, erase Saturday Night Live or Key and Peele from existence. Easy choice, Saturday Night Live.
For sure.
And I feel like they just like, I don't know whether it's a legacy of like Lorne Michaels has just been there forever. And it's this, you know, it's a routine and it's a kind of an institutionalized system they have to write it. You know, you always hear about how they come in on a certain date, everybody does the skits and everybody throws them into the mix and, you know, and there's this paring down and blah, blah, blah. And you have to fight, you know, to get your sketches in and all that kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, they know they're only going to have 10 sketches, you know, and that's it. And therefore they have to fill up so much time and they're not writing for that time. Like rare is a sketch that is consistently funny that is a length that program needs. You know, like for every David S. Pumpkin thing, which was pretty tight, there's something towards the end of the show that goes 6 minutes long and has one joke in it.
Yeah.
And I feel like
everything after Weekend Update often, because they're like changing the sets. They got to go to the musical performance,
why is that even still a thing?
So there's a lot of logistics involved in why Saturday Night Live is paced the way it is. And I don't know if that's ever going to change until like people there change, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just like sometimes just like it's 90 minutes to invest in stuff that's like, you know, it's got 8 minutes of funny in it for me sometimes, you know. And I like that toilet sketch, and there's lots of stuff historically that is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But when you compare it to the mass of content they do, I mean, their hit rate's pretty low.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I mean, I would point to that Black Jeopardy sketch as like, as well as David S. Pumpkins, both from the Tom Hanks episode, which was the one before this, as like being exactly the right length, and that you get in and you get out at the right time. Like, always the problem with sketch comedy in general, but SNL in particular, because they have to do it on such a stupid timeline, is like they just don't know how to end things. And that was the other thing that was so good about the Black Jeopardy sketch, I thought, was that it was the right length. Anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say that Tom Hanks episode, if you looked at it at the entirety of that,
mm-hmm.
It was so much better than the Benedict Cumberbatch episode.
Yes.
And you know, when you have someone like Tom Hanks, who's just so naturally funny, so naturally charismatic, knows the format, knows how to do sketches, has been yep. on the show a bunch of times, like the quality is just going to be so much better. Mm-hmm. And I like Benedict Cumberbatch. I think he did fine. I don't think anything to do with this last episode was,
had he
was
been on it
him.
Before?
No, that was his first time.
That seems yeah. so strange to me. But anyway, sorry, continue.
I thought he was fine. I thought he did what he was supposed to do.
He was but getting the writing material.
Yeah,
the writing was not up to what it was, like, say, for the Tom Hanks episode. And also, you have that thing that happens where they've kind of front-load the season. When the debut episode of any SNL season is going to have a lot of strong sketches because they've had all summer to kind of come up with ideas.
Yep.
Once you get into episode 4 and 5, it starts kind of petering out. And, mm-hmm. and I'm surprised there wasn't more election stuff in this episode, actually. I thought they would mind that a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, just how crazy it is this close to the election.
Yeah, I agree. I was surprised actually that he committed as much as he did, because sometimes when people are like quite well known like that, it feels to me like they just sort of phone it in. Like Margot Robbie was a bit like that too, although she's not as big a name as she thinks she is. But anyway, also the sports guys, like, is it necessary to have baseball players in 2 sketches? Sarah, what did you think about that?
I was fine with it.
Okay.
I mean, you know. It's the Cubs. And
sure.
Anthony Rizzo can twerk, motherfucker.
That's
like,
true. He
I was sort
good.
Of like, this sketch is going on way too long. What the hell? And then Cumberbatch took off the hat and he had like a man bun wig on, which I was like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
And then it was just going on and everyone was totally about to start laughing. And then the Cubs come in and like Dexter Fowler was totally feeling himself. I don't know. Like, I love baseball. I run a postseason pool. I've been fucking living with these people, including Bill Murray, for like a month.
Yeah.
And I'm super happy for them. And you could tell they were super stoked about it. And yeah, I thought it was fine. Like, mm-hmm. it's the Cubs. The last time they won was 1908, before electricity even, basically. Like, I totally get it. It was too much, mm-hmm. but I personally was fine with it. It was sort of like, hey, Sarah,
yeah.
we know you never watch this show. Oh, here are these dudes singing with little hats on. And then, I mean, Bill Murray, like, what a perfect moment for him. And it was timely. Yeah. And I think everyone over there is probably fucking exhausted just from living in America mm-hmm. at this time in history. So I was okay with it. But I think your objections are legit.
Yeah, I mean, usually the athlete episodes are the ones that, I mean, I never skip an episode, but those are the ones, if I ever did, those are the ones I fast forward through the most grudgingly. Anyway, speaking of what we normally do on the show, or highs and lows in general, let us go through the categories that we have set up for a general discussion of our, like, SNL superlatives. So, Dave, why don't you start? All-time best political impression.
My favorite is Phil Hartman as Ronald Reagan,
yeah.
not Randy Quaid, and the absolute best skit when he's the smartest man in the room,
yes.
where he's like the mastermind, kind of like he is pretending to have a little snooze, and whenever everybody leaves his staff, he's up on his feet. Yeah. All right, we're going to do this and this and this and this.
Totally.
And it was just such like a perfect like cadence to the sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil Hartman is like one of the funniest guys ever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely my pick.
Good one. Sarah.
Yes, Sarah.
I guess Dana Carvey, although they really mined that like too far.
As Bush or as Perot?
As Bush.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. because that was just like a very familiar thing that you just saw every week. But, and this was not an impression. This was like an actual politician being on the show. Mm-hmm. I know we have found out some things about this guy that we don't like, but John McCain,
he was really funny.
Episode was, and I've been forgiving him for some bullshit for a long time because of that sketch and him being like, and like rubbing his fake beard on, I guess it was Amy Poehler, who looked totally terrified. Oh my God, that sketch was so
good. A really
It wasn't an impression, but God bless him.
Yep. Excellent honorable mention. All right. Mine is Tina Fey as Sarah Palin. She was basically drafted into it, even though she wasn't on the show anymore, because she did, in some senses, look like Sarah Palin. I still think Nia Vardalos looks more like her in the face, especially, but...
Agree.
Tina Fey really, like, she got all of, not just her voice and her accent, but also, like, her physical mannerisms, that thing that she would do with her finger. Like, she really got inside that lady, and if that was part of the reason that she didn't get elected on that ticket in 2008, it was one more thing we owe Tina Fey a debt for.
Totally.
Omar.
I'm probably going to go with Dana Carvey with the Bush and Perot, which he's been actually kind of doing the interview circuit lately, which, you know, talking about his upcoming Netflix special. And he talked about this on Stern a couple of days ago that apparently, and I must have forgotten this or didn't know it, but apparently David Spade was actually Perot on stage, you know, not on camera, but like kind of as the double.
Oh.
And had to do the makeup and everything. Poor guy. But yeah, that one is pretty legendary. And going back before that, I think the only one I'd have before that is as vile a human being as I think he is, Chevy Chase as Gerald Ford, just in the sense that it kind of ushered in that whole thing of like presidential impressions that weren't impressions at all, like didn't look like him, didn't sound like him. It was just kind of creating an impression out of a habit or or some incident or mannerism. Like, I thought that was pretty revolutionary for the time.
Yeah. I just have to mention this before we move on. I'm still mad at Dan Aykroyd for not shaving his mustache when he was playing Nixon in the early, early, early days. Fucking commit, dude. Jesus. Nixon does not have a mustache.
It was part of that ethos of like, oh, now we don't have to look like the person we're imitating. But yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
All right, moving on. Dave, all-time favorite sketch.
All right, well, I have two, so I'm going to play one. And if nobody picks the other one, I'll pick it up at the end of the
okay.
thing. All right?
Yep.
My first favorite sketch is the Underground Records. There was about three or four of them. It was Jason Sudeikis and the girl that's now a new girl, whose name I forget,
Nazim Pedrad.
Nazim Pedrad, thank you.
Yes, they're gathering at the Juggalos.
It's basically, take off.
Yeah.
Here's a little bit of it.
Warren, you won't be able to cheat on your girlfriend?
You will.
Because the festival's going to be crawling with three Hispanic prostitutes.
Nita, Pinta, and Scuzzy Bear.
I'm just going to dumb stuff to do, like show your little ass boobs to an old guy.
Get real high and cry.
You can have a crap off with the shark himself, Greg Norman.
Yo, I hear that gets gross.
I ain't shy.
I know that, kiddo.
And it goes on for like each one's like 3 minutes long.
Oh, they are so good.
They are so funny. This it's called the Underground Records, you know, festival.
And then all those crazy graphics with the bright letters and
it's pitch perfect.
Yes. And the recurring joke of Ass Dan, Bobby Moynihan is Ass Dan.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Sarah.
Beautiful choice, Dave.
Thank you.
I know it's not that funny in retrospect, but Wayne's World, like,
yes,
just got so much mileage out of that shit. And to this day, like, when someone is being really pretentious in a movie review, I'll just be like, it was alienating and pristine. Like, hated it. I don't know. Like,
we just watched that.
We watched Wayne's World last weekend.
Yeah.
It was time well spent.
It, you know, it's still pretty funny in parts, but Garth holds up so well.
Yeah.
He was always my favorite part of that. And my all-time favorite Garth moment is just when he's talking to Rob Lowe and he's kind of, his eyes are going back and forth. And we fear change. And me and my friend Tammy from university exchanged that line so many times. So many times.
Yeah.
Tara.
Good choice. With all due respect to Black Jeopardy, which we've already talked about in this episode a lot, two a-holes. Kristen Wiig and Jason Sudeikis as the asshole couple, like going to various businesses or other settings. For example, two a-holes go to an ad agency was the Mad Men takeoff when Jon Hamm hosted the first time. there was really nothing to their characters, except as soon as you saw, they were like, oh, I've seen those assholes so many times in my life. One time I took a picture of two a-holes at the Lincoln Plaza Cinema in New York, where all of the art movies would play.
Dave only like, two, take that down.
Yeah, seriously.
Better day.
Anyway, I knew that the writing was on the wall for both of those actors to leave the show, like in the late.
You held a torch for that.
I carried a torch for that. I loved it. Obviously, like every week that it was getting close to both of them leaving the show, I was like, they've got to bring back two a-holes. And at a certain point, they just stopped doing it. And my heart was broken and still is. So, yeah, two a-holes. Omar.
Oh, yeah. I would have liked to have had them bring that back too.
And a bunch of them aren't online either. Like it's at one point there was only one, I think, and I don't even think that one is on Hulu anymore. Anyway, Omar.
I have a real obvious one and a really obscure one. The More Cowbell with
good one. That was on my short list.
Will Ferrell. I mean, that's so good. Perfect. The really obscure one, which I think I've mentioned in a Walking Dead recap before and had struggled to even find it online, was I think Conan O'Brien wrote it. It was called Attack of the Masturbating Zombies. Do you remember that one?
No.
This is like John Lovett's era, and it was about these zombies who, you know, would attack, but they would just kind of stand there and masturbate behind bushes. And just kind of...
Oh, God.
Wow.
So
that's
funny and weird. So funny and weird. And so Conan O'Brien. I could recite lines from that all day. It's such a good sketch. So, wow. Yeah, look that up.
I have zero memory of that. I will look that up.
And
yeah. Oh, sorry.
It was great.
And did anyone pick your second one, Dave?
And here it is.
Okay.
How about that, Greg? What a start, huh?
See, she's got to be careful here.
Oh, great. Now, why is that?
Well, two more strikes and she is out of there.
No, hold on, Greg. I think you're thinking about baseball.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. I do not know this game. It is an absolute mystery to me.
Well, one thing that's not a mystery is the quality of Vagisil. Vagisil. I scream, you scream, we all scream for vagina cream.
That was an excellent series too. Good choice, Dave. Oh God, I love Twinkle and Stink. Sudeikis and Forte together are so funny.
Will Forte is the most underrated cast member of Saturday Night Live.
That I would agree with that argument. He was very versatile and super funny.
The one that never made it in, because it's like I really enjoyed it, but it's not like the funniest, is the Falconer.
Yes,
it's so stupid. Like it's like MacGruber is the popular choice for me. The Falconer is like my MacGruber as far as like what?
Yeah,
that is so dumb. I love it. Yeah,
I also love when the two of them would go on Weekend Update and do when they were John Bovey, the opposite Bon Jovi tribute band.
I watched that one today too. Yeah. Yeah.
What was his name?
Donald.
All right, moving on. All-time most baffling sketch can also be sketch whose popularity baffles you, Dave.
Matt Foley, the van by the river.
Okay. That was
never
my honorable mention.
Yeah. Didn't get it. It was on, I feel like it was like you know the running joke on 30 Rock where it's like this is our 114th show and we've done Pam 115 times.
Yes.
I feel like when Chris Farley was on Saturday Night Live, this skit was on every other week, and I did not find it funny.
All right, Sarah.
Yeah, I did not love that one either. But occasionally, Farley could do something with it. Like, I don't get cheeseburger.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I also just don't get Belushi. Like everyone says he was a genius. I think you had to be there, and I wasn't, and I don't get it. Like. Mm-hmm. I'm not glad he's dead or anything. I just
like breaking podcaster. I mean, glad
fight me.
Not him. He did.
That's right. I had an honorable mention from the Belushi era also, which was Blues Brothers. Why is that a sketch? It's not funny. It's just you guys playing music and fucking around. And why was it a movie? Don't know.
And also you own a whole bar and that was a whole thing. Like just put it away. No one cares.
Yes. But I'm going to say mine is Sprockets, which was also a one note idea that I don't know why it kept coming back. And to me was far inferior to Wayne's World in the Mike Myers pantheon, and also Lothar of the Hill People, as long as we're here, which is funnier to me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Sprockets, what about the Sprockets Madonna short?
Dumb.
Okay.
But that wasn't, it was a Wayne's World.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought
it just had a guy in a, it had Garth in a jumpsuit, that's like the Sprocket suit. It was probably the same costume.
My bad. You're correct.
Omar.
Garth and Kat. Don't get it. Never got it. Started fast forwarding through those.
I don't even remember what Garth and Kat was.
It was, what's his face? Fred Armisen and Kirsten Dunst. I mean, Kirsten Wig doing their little improv songs on Weekend Update.
Oh, I do like Garth and Kat.
Oh, yeah. I do not.
I generally don't like any of the Weekend Update like skit within a skit things.
Oh, I do.
I think they're really more miss than hit. I know everybody loves Stefan.
Yeah,
he was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it seems like since like Adam Sandler hit it big, like everybody wants to get their own personal project inside there is the easiest way to insert it.
Yes.
And it's the biggest fish out of water, I think, on that show.
I mean, I appreciate at least when people are trying to do characters as opposed to like what they do with Pete Davidson and even Leslie Jones, who I love, like when they just have them come on and basically do like 4 minutes of their stand up. Yeah. Like, that's not what this is for.
No.
I will say of Garth and Kat, though, I would trade all of them for more Judy Grimes, which was the Kristen Wiig travel writer character who would like just go on weird flights of fancy. Like, what if I talk like this? Just kidding. That was my favorite thing that she would do on Weekend
Update. Seems like Kate McKinnon has filled that slot on Weekend Update. She kind of comes in and just does like a random character, and it's always funny when
she
does it.
Yes, she does. Her Olga Pavlovsky, the depressed Russian woman, is very funny in that regard. All right.
I'll go last on this one just in case I have a clip that somebody else may use.
Okay, Sarah, all-time favorite commercial parody.
I feel like I'm forgetting a bunch of obvious ones, but Mom Jeans was like,
good one.
It's one of those things that SNL did that like it was not cutting edge exactly, but like created the market, for lack of a better term, that was like, then that term became widespread, and just everybody was completely committed. Like that one ground level shot of their butts is just like, these are professionals. Like, what bosses? Oh my God.
I know.
Yeah. And it's pretty short too.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah,
that's a great one. That was on my short list too. I'm gonna say my first runner up is Chonk from this season.
Yes, that's a great one.
That was good.
Chonk. But mine is also another Tina Fey one, which she wrote Mom Jeans as well. But it's Annual. It's the
I got it.
Oh yay!
How does it work? Each Annual pack has 44 weeks of active pills instead of the usual 3. Keeping you on a constant stream of hormones so your time of the month can be just once a year.
That's all I have time for.
And when it is time for your period, hold on to your f***ing hat.
Just scenes of destruction following, like, scary black and white. So good. Similar to Mom Jeans, very like smart and extremely like specific to the female experience in like such a smart, relatable, recognizable way. So yes, Omar.
Oh, I had a bunch for this one, but going back to the John Belushi, Little Chocolate Donuts,
a classic,
which never fails to make me laugh, and it, just the simple, how simple and dumb a joke it is, it just always works on me.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Dave, yours was...
Well, mine was Annuel, too. I really enjoyed that one. But two honorable mentions. One is one I cannot find online. If you ever find it, please send me a link. It's for one of the very first ones they ever did for a cereal called Quarry.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a box of rocks.
Oh, I thought that was The Simpsons.
No.
Amazing.
And then that's the one that I thought was the funniest fucking thing when it first came on. And granted, I was probably in my teens or whatever, you know, thereabouts, was one called Clucking Chicken.
Oh yeah, sure.
And it's one, it's a Robert Smigel short, and it's basically, it's just a cartoon narrating their own journey through death at Clucking Chicken, you know, I'm drawn and quartered and blah, blah, blah. Just keeps on going until like, I'm going in your mouth now. And it is just like really morbid.
Yeah.
But in a really fascinating way. I thought that was actually pretty smart. It was pretty funny.
Echoed in a sideways fashion on the BoJack Horseman chicken episode in season 2.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so the next one is all time favorite update anchor.
Yes. Or anchor team.
Yeah. Yes. And I don't think I'll be the first person to say, I think Tina Fey, Amy Poehler was the strongest. I will give a personal runner-up prize to Norm Macdonald, mm-hmm. who I thought wasn't a very good anchory anchor, but was really funny in a way that Norm Macdonald really was at that time. There's something about his delivery, the way that he could just sort of not laugh at his own joke, but like, I don't know, somehow signify how stupid this was without having to over explain it.
No, he would cut his eyes off camera and be like, really?
Yeah.
That I thought was really let himself choice. Well to that, even though he was not very angry.
Yes. And even though it was the pre Kindle single era, there should be a Kindle single of just his OJ Simpson jokes, because that was his stock and trade at the time.
Yes.
Yes. Very good. Sarah.
Now and forever, Dennis Miller. His star sank, the whole football thing, and then he became one of those like Adam Baldwin type conservative weirdos, maybe a little bit.
Yes.
But oh my God, I had such a huge crush on him back then, and he really like, he was there for a while. He had that like splendiferous comedian mullet of the late 80s, and he just had like this way of like, he'd read the joke, people would laugh, he'd still be just staring. People would laugh more. They'd stop, and then he'd do that high-pitched laugh. Like, there's just something about it that I think maybe he was literally stalling so that they could fix some set element sometimes, but he'd just be like, okay. And then his big, like, swoopy signature, I don't know, like, for a pretentious nerd like myself in the late 80s, he was definitely Buntnip.
I love how much you love him. I also picked Tina Fey, but I had her with Jimmy Fallon. I thought they were a good team. I liked how they balanced each other out. I thought they were good compliments to each other. And my all-time favorite joke was she does this whole setup about a black bear, and then they cut to Jimmy, and he's like, Tina, my wife is a black bear. And they have a picture, a framed picture of him like at their wedding, hugging this black bear in a veil. So stupid. But like, they got away with that kind of stuff. And they were also had to do it at a very hard time, which was after 9/11 in 2001. So the two of them together warm my heart. And that is my pick. Omar.
I'm a Norm Macdonald guy. I love Dennis Miller. He was the one that I, you know, grew up watching. Norm Macdonald for me, I mean, and also I think very underrated. I don't think people look back and go, oh yeah, he was the best one. I think, but his jokes were always so solid and sharp. And to this day, I can go back and watch those and still laugh. I think he's really, really, and still fun. Like when you see him on talk shows now, he tells
so funny,
really funny stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a unique comedic mind that I don't think would have been an obvious choice for that slot. And somehow kind of made it his own.
Yeah, Comedy Central roasts are pretty bad, but he is always very, very funny whenever they have him on, because he'll just do like
when he does anti-jokes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He'll do the dumbest jokes that he can possibly think of. All right. All-time favorite host, David T. Cole.
Last category.
Yes, this is our last category.
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
I feel like he is always up for pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm. He's a pretty good impressionist too, considering.
He is.
I mean, pre-Trump even.
Yeah, and he has excellent comic timing, which is so important. You know, like, and, you know, we all know him now from 30 Rock, but, mm-hmm. you know, before he started in that, you know, he was on, I don't know, whatever, 6 or 7 times. And I don't know how many other celebrities would do, like, that really fucked up Boy Scout
Canteen boy
skit and stuff like that. Like, I don't remember too much of it now. If I watch it now, it'd be squicked out as it's a little homophobic. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
But you know, to watch it at the time is like, I don't think anybody else would do that. Like, you know, and I just feel like he's like, you know, he's not the best person. We know that.
Yeah, we do.
But he seems to be like a really good host. You know, he's the kind of guy that'll go into the writer's room and say, sure, yeah, fuck it. Why not? Let's do it.
Yep.
And I think that a lot of other hosts, whether they maybe not come from a comic background, whether they're relatively new to their fame and they're getting a lot of advice on what not to do, what to be careful about, that, you know, sometimes hosts end up playing it too safe.
Yep.
And the comedy suffers as a result. And I never got that impression with Alec Baldwin on the show.
Yeah, that's a great pick.
Do you remember Green Hilly, where he was like kissing everybody and the dog puppet?
Yes.
Well, he also did the Sweaty Balls.
Yes.
Sketch,
yes.
Which yep. is a sketch, which is very famous.
Yep. Sarah.
I'm going to go with John Goodman.
Oh, nice.
Sort of for the same reason that he's my favorite thing about Roseanne is that he is funny. And he is like nimbler, like with the physical comedy than you would expect from someone who is basically a three bedroom.
Yeah.
And you always just get the sense like he is often, as Hanks are and as Baldwin has been, like, and Steve Martin, I think, too, are often called upon, like when something falls through at the last minute, because they have done it 100,000 times and they'll know what to do. But you definitely get that sense from Goodman that, like, he's not going to let there be a problem. Like, he knows it's live TV. Dad is in charge. It's going to be cool. We're not turning the car around. Everybody chill. So, yeah, I think Goodman's my favorite.
Well, I went with the Alec Baldwin of our generation, minus being a terrible person in real life, which is John Hamm. John Hamm, obviously, he's my guy. I've talked about him before as a crush object, but I feel like he does not get enough credit for his comic acting. He does a lot of more like alternative-y stuff, like the greatest television event in history, Simon and Simon credits remake, God, for example, and cameos and stuff like Children's Hospital and Angie Tribeca and this season on Last Man on Earth and stuff. And, you know, voicing a toilet on Bob's Burgers. Like, he just is, he's similar to what, as you described Alec Baldwin, like, he doesn't care. He will do anything.
But he also came up Hollywood with all those people in LA that podcast.
Yes.
That has to do with anybody in LA. So
he was
like,
friends with everyone in the alternative comedy scene in LA. Like, he's played poker with all of them. Like, he's,
well, I think that's it comes his, to him naturally.
For sure. But I feel like SNL is his opportunity to like show his comic talents off to such a mainstream audience that
What was the sketch with the saxophone thing?
Julio? Something like
something
that.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name, but where it's like just coming out during labor.
Yeah. Playing.
And Ham and Buble, the champagne restaurant.
Sergio.
Thank you. Knew it was something like that. I mean, all of it. He's just great.
But if you actually just like seek John Hamm out on a podcast, you know, Never Not Funny or Comedy Bang Bang or whatever.
He's so quick. Like, he's funny for real. Yes.
Yeah. He's so dry sometimes, though, too. It's like, you know, why I like his comedy, I feel like he splits traditional American laugh with British laugh at.
Yes.
And I feel like that's about as much British style humor Americans can take, and he's right up to that line.
Yeah.
And I love it.
I mean, I don't wish him any kind of failure in his career, but I feel like he's not, like, he was obviously amazing as Don Draper, but I don't feel like he's necessarily that kind of leading man who's going to have like a Ben Affleck-y type of career. You know what I mean? Like, I would just love him to do a really, really good, smart FX sitcom. But until he does that,
he's going to have an Alec Baldwin career.
Probably. Yeah. Anyway, Omar.
I need to go watch Hamm and Bubbly. I love that sketch. I have two that I think could have easily integrated into the cast had in a different timeline. One is Steve Martin, who I think people forget that he wasn't a cast member, that he was just really early on as a guest host. But he was so good then. And even when he hosts now, you know, it's always great. You always know it's going to be a good episode. And Melissa McCarthy, who I feel have easily been a great SNL cast member had things played out differently. It's a little bit of diminishing returns, I think, the last time she was on, but the first two times she hosted were outstanding. Almost every single sketch she was fantastic in. So yeah, I like her a lot whenever she's on.
Yeah, she's great.
All right, so those are our choices. I will have to put one rule down, which is if Steve Martin does come on Saturday Night Live, he's not allowed to bring any banjos.
Yeah, also, we should mention... the next episode, the first post-election episode, is going to be hosted by Dave Chappelle. And I loved the news cycle of this, that like everyone I follow on Twitter being super duper excited about this on Friday. And then like on Friday morning or Saturday morning, a story came out in The Observer where he was like anti-Hillary Clinton and saying she doesn't deserve to be on Money and stuff. And then everyone had to be like, oh, right, he's crazy. Like, this might not be great, but maybe it will
or
be.
Or maybe it'll be the greatest.
Or maybe it'll be the greatest.
Yeah. Yay, Tribe Called Quest.
And yes, Tribe Called Quest in support of their first album since 1998. So that's this Saturday. So check that out.
Hello, everyone. Once again, it's time for The Blotter Presents, and actually, that's not quite as awkward a segue as it usually is, since Dave was just talking about, like, some dead creature narrating it, the end of its life.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Well, what do you know? Lifetime's take on the JonBenet Ramsey murder, Who Killed JonBenet, also has a dead creature narrating the end of its life, namely JonBenet herself.
Ooh.
Oh dear.
Boy.
Yeah. This movie.
In a baby!
It wasn't my idea. I mean, this is like, and it's sort of like the only quote unquote interesting thing in the movie. Like, it has no reason to exist. Doesn't really take a position on who killed JonBenet, except to strongly imply in a scene that the same woman who played Christy Masters in Romy and Michelle's high school reunion, who is playing Patsy here, off JonBenet, because she's performatively crying and then she stops and peeks at the detective through her fingers like, okay, got it. But we don't really find out. The movie doesn't take a position on who killed JonBenet except via the quote-unquote acting. Ooh. On display, from which I can only conclude, and did conclude on previously.tv, that JonBenet Ramsey was killed by farts. Horrible Bud Light hangover fought with a pork roll, egg and cheese sandwich farts that refused to dissipate. Don't think I understand why this movie exists, except as a workfare program for our thespian friends north of the border, since the only way it could be more Canadian is if it had been filmed in the washroom of a Tim Hortons in Banff, cast entirely with Canadian Tire Manager of the Year finalists named Gordy Trudeau, who are wearing hockey jerseys and communicating entirely in the syllable A.
I don't want to criticize, but you have to substitute Timmins for Banff, I think.
That is fine. Okay. We will also accept Timmins or Ajax.
Sarnia.
Yeah, like, please just order Michelle Gill not to pronounce it tomorrow. The man played an American president in House of Cards. Not that I expected any better, and I actually feel kind of sorry for Ion Bailey, who I think knows exactly what a superfluous piece of shit he's in. But he has to play it, like, straight so as not to be disrespectful. But the most disrespectful aspect of it is, like, whatever tween they got to narrate it as JonBenet. Like, it's just completely inappropriate and wrong and boring. And the fact that this came at the end of some actually fairly interesting nonfiction reporting about the case is sort of a pity. So if that's sitting on your DVR, delete it immediately and let us never speak of it again.
Wait, you know what they could have done really to get around that whole having to hire a tween person and scar them for life is hire forever pubescent voice Yardley Smith as Lisa Simpson narrating as JonBenet.
Or Maria Bamford or Kristen Schaal. There's lots of baby voiced actors out there.
It is time to... Oh my God, I'm so dizzy. It is time to go around the dial, and our first stop is my wife, love of my life, Tara Ariano.
Jeez, the suspense is going to kill you.
You got
Omar,
there eventually.
You know it was almost you. Okay.
All right. So we've run out of sitcoms to rewatch on streaming when we're falling asleep. So I have given Dave leave to start queuing up Ancient Aliens. Because usually I fall asleep within like 10 minutes, so I don't really care normally. Except the other night we started watching one about Stonehenge. Was it about Stonehenge specifically? It was like ancient monuments or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it was about like, yeah.
So the whole thing about it was that they found this other like buried sort of like barrier around this area. It's like something long
there's
in England.
Let me fill you in, guys. God. There's Stonehenge. This is the one y'all know about. There's a bigger one around Stonehenge called Woodhenge, which is just basically they found the holes of the posts.
Yep.
And there's another one that's sort of nearby called Superhenge, which right. is basically a giant trench with some buried rocks in it.
Right. So I got sucked into this one and started having a lot of opinions about it, mostly that all of the Ancient Aliens guys are fucking dumb. Because when you look at the illustrations of what they're showing, it's like, to me, it's pretty clear this is some kind of a fortress. Like, the area is gigantic. And so I said this, and Dave was like, be a pretty small fortress, because he thought I meant Stonehenge. Anyway, whatever. All of these guys are so...
Well, hang on.
What?
Well, everybody...
What?
Aliens outside of the equation. Everybody knows Stonehenge uh-huh. wasn't a fort.
I wasn't talking about Stonehenge.
Nor Woodhenge, or any of these
I didn't say
henges.
Either of them were a fortress. I was talking about Superhenge.
Don't forget no, Avebury.
God. Anyway, first of all... The answer to all of these questions is aliens did it, of course. Like, there's almost every episode has this the question, blah, 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 blah. Ancient astronaut theorists say yes. Uh-huh. Like, that exact construction, yes. Like, to the point where, like, ancient astronaut theorists say yes.
Although,
should be a t-shirt, like Italian girls do it with marinara or whatever the fuck.
Friends of mine, Chris and Lori Harfinist, really? Who may be listening to this podcast right now. Hi, yes. guys. Like, whenever someone just asks a question and then there's, like, a silence in the conversation, one of them will be like, ancient alien theorists say yes,
yep.
including questions about the menu.
God,
like, do you guys have any of that paella left? Ancient aliens say yes.
Yeah.
I'm stealing that. Sorry.
Anyway, so, I mean, I've mostly fallen asleep in every other one that Dave has tried to screen for me, I think, including the one where it's like, who made the moon? It's like, what the fuck kind of question is that? It's the moon. No one made it.
Tara, the yes. moon is hollow, and it contains a giant alien civilization of watchers that watch over us for reasons unknown. Seems like a boring job, but, you know, whatever.
I will say, this the one
thing... Wait, I have to ask. Do you okay. enjoy how seriously I pretend to take it when you
yes,
say stuff?
Yes, I do, okay. because usually there'll be some preposterous thing, and I'll look over at Dave, and he'll just be, like, smiling and nodding like an idiot. It's like, pretending he believes it. I will say, it was a good setup, or a good backgrounder for People of Earth, which we'll be discussing later in the segment, in terms of defining the three kinds of aliens that people generally say they have been visited by if they've had alien experiences. And I will also say that although this is not my particular jam, it is great for falling asleep. And if there were a show like this that were all about Illuminati symbology, I would be all about it.
Oh, there are. There's conspiracy shows and stuff.
I know,
like
but if there was
there
like,
is one about aliens yes. and the Illuminati. Stonemasons and Illuminati.
Of course there is. There's
oh, yeah,
there's
the Knights Templar were ancient aliens.
Yeah.
Dave, this show is in its 11th season. Yeah. There have been episodes that are like aliens and candles.
Yeah.
Aliens and lawnmowers. Like, it's aliens and every possible thing you can think of. Uh-huh. It's like everything.
Yeah.
But
you're
watching
what you're not saying is half the fun
yes.
is meeting all the talking heads.
Oh, the talking heads are superb. They're all it's like the worst Tinder matches you could ever see.
No,
they're all
every talking
so
head in that
gross
show
looking.
Only goal in life is to save up enough money for a mail order bride.
Yep,
that is all they're in it for, guys.
Yeah. And occasionally damn. They'll have like a real scientist talking about real science stuff. And I always wonder, like, yeah. what did the producers tell them they were here to talk about? And then they found out like 3 months later, I was on Ancient Aliens. What? Yeah. They just told me it was a history channel. Yeah. Anyway, what I'm saying about the Illuminati is, you remember that site I used to be obsessed with, Vigilant Citizen,
yeah.
that I wrote that story about for the
yep.
All?
Mm-hmm.
I'll link it in the show notes. If there was a Vigilant Citizen show, I would be so about it. It's not even... funny.
Well, I like, tell you, Netflix, at least a year ago, had a treasure trove of those kind of shows.
Yeah.
Just sort of like mysteries of society kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, everything from sort of where Dan Brown got all that Holy Grail bullshit from.
Sure.
And that kind of stuff. So I'm going to guess that those shows exist for you, and I will be happy to find them for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
That would be awesome. I need a deep dive into the Denver International Airport and all those crazy fucking murals.
All right. What's your plug?
All right. Coming this week, the day after the election, to help us all come down and celebrate and remember there are good things in the world, Laura Waters is doing another Law and Order supercut. What's that you say? Another garment that's appeared in multiple episodes? Yes, but what garment is it? Stay tuned. Come back on Wednesday morning, and it will be live on the site.
All right, Omar, your turn.
Well, if you have a Blu-ray player, as I do, you probably at some point bought Planet Earth to watch on it because it was absolutely gorgeous and amazing, and it was something you would show on your HGTV to wow anyone that didn't have an HGTV and be like, ha ha, look at that, sucker. Well, Planet Earth 2 is upon us. It has already started airing in England on BBC, I believe, starting Sunday night, I think, and it's going to be on BBC America on January 28th. This is a six-part series. David Attenborough is in it. They've got islands, mountains, jungles, deserts, grasslands, and I think different from last time, cities. They're actually going to be showing cities, which is interesting. So the big deal with this one is that, I mean, they used drones this time and did, you know, covered new species that didn't exist when they did the first series. And also, it's going to be in 4K, which I don't know how that's going to work exactly because my BBC America is not in 4K, so I don't know how that's going to work. But it will probably be available somewhere for streaming in that higher quality if you have a 4K TV. But yeah, this is probably going to be due for 4K what the first Planet Earth did for Blu-ray, which is be like, look at my amazing home theater system in jungles and weird creatures and, you know, underground and stuff. So I am very much looking forward to that in January.
Buried the lead for everybody here, which is there's an Earth 2.
People who watch all the DC shows on the CW have known that for a while, Dave.
Also, there was an NBC show called Earth 2 back in the early X-Files era. Mm. With the
on Earth 2, I have BBC America in 4K. So
who was the Noxzema girl that like killed somebody or drunk drive?
Rebecca Gayheart.
Yep.
Yeah, she was in that.
A friend of mine dated her.
Oh, what?
Long story. I'll tell you off my.
Oh man.
And, sorry, what do you got to plug there, Omar?
Oh, I do a podcast called Statesman Shots with my friend Tolly Mosley.
Yes.
That is about Austin culture. We just recorded a live episode at the big Sound on Sound festival over the weekend, which is awesome. And also, if you want to be cheered up this election cycle, I wrote a top 10 things that have been positive that have come out of this election season online for 512tech.com. You can still find that. So I just looked for things online that were actually not so bad this election, things that memes and other things that emerged that actually might cheer you up if you're feeling really horrible and depressed on Tuesday.
Thank you, Omar. And you also, as we mentioned before, you cover Saturday Night Live for us at previously.tv and also The Walking Dead.
Very similar
Yay.
Shows. Sarah D.
So,
Bunting.
Netflix is The Crown, forged by ancient aliens. Alien theorists say yes. No, not really. This is Netflix's 10-part drama that dropped, I guess, last Friday.
Yep.
About the reign of Queen Elizabeth II. I think every season focuses on a different decade or period in her reign. This one, of course, is her accession to the throne. Issues with her sister wanting to marry a divorced semi-commoner, etc. It does move slowly, but I've watched the whole thing.
Me too.
I adored it. Jared Harris as her father, George VI, of the King's Speech, Colin Firth, was so charming. And when his character dies, like this all happened in the 50s, you get it. But, no, he was not probed by ancient aliens, but I actually felt that loss very much. And I thought the show did such an excellent job of how fathers are with their daughters and how difficult it is to, you know, go on. And, I also think that the show is doing an excellent job and Claire Foy as the queen is doing an excellent job making her like kind of bland and tending towards the unlikable often. And she's like, she's not selling that out at all. Like, I think they feel this is an accurate portrayal, and often many of the people around her are more interesting than she is, especially her grandmother, Queen Mary, who was constantly drinking scotch in like every single shot, no matter what time of day it was.
Yep.
My people. But yeah, it's obviously gorgeous to look at. It's really well cast. My only complaint is that Harriet Walter as Mrs. Winston Churchill is only in like three episodes, because I love her.
Yeah, she's great.
But yeah, if you were like, well, I don't know, costume drama, blah, like it's really well done. There are some moments that are maybe a little much. Tara, did you guys like it as much as I did?
Yeah, I started to watch it on Saturday because it seemed like Dave was going to take a nap. And I was like, well, I'll just put this on. I thought it was going to be his Ancient Aliens. And then he got totally sucked in and we watched the entire season all on Saturday.
Yeah, she did the same thing with me and Downton Abbey Once Upon a Time, too. I was like, what's this? This is stupid. Let's watch another one just to tell you how stupid it still is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately, a Sarah Bunting never shows up on The Crown. Or does she? She doesn't.
About the show was that, you know, it weaves in Winston Churchill's post-war leadership in there, too. So it's not all, you know, royal family all the time. So it kind of like tends to break up the story a bit, which I think it benefits from. Although there was one episode that was like all Winston Churchill, which I thought was
the portrait thing, which I thought that was a bit much, portrait, but it was still well acted.
I enjoyed it. I just thought it seemed like somebody just really loved that story and wanted to put it in there rather than it being like integral to the Crown stream of the story. Complaining. No, just thought it was an interesting choice. The Fog episode was fascinating. I actually did not know about that at all. That piece of history totally eluded me. So that was very interesting.
Well, the thing that I can say about the show is that my husband and I were like on Amazon repeatedly or like on Google throughout, like looking up more about whatever story had been alluded to, or trying to like find books that we could read more about it, or trying to find illegal uploads of the Monarchy series on YouTube, which we failed to do. If anyone knows where I might find that for a New York or an American DVD player, please let me know. But yeah, it's really great. I recommend it.
Email the Fug Girls. If anybody's going to know, it's them.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. It was great. Very well acted. I did the same thing where I was particularly looking up the timeline of Margaret's relationship with Townsend.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah, that was...
Because from what I could tell, it said that like they broke up like 3 weeks after he went to Brussels, unless I read Wikipedia wrong, because that was...
No, I think they went on... How I read that was that they went on like a three-week vacation, realized that absence doesn't always make the heart grow fonder, and were like, bye. But it would not surprise me to learn that this is how it went down, that the family thought the 2 years apart would end it, and when it didn't... They were like, oh, BT dubs, you have to give literally everything up and become Mrs. Townsend. And Margaret was like, nah.
Yeah.
Also, Mrs. Winston Churchill is the nurse who heals Chewbacca in The Force Awakens.
Oh, well, that's nice. Nice little paycheck for
What do you got the plug there?
I am going to plug, as you know, frequent guest Mark Blankenship and I have a podcast called Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. We had to pinch hit with another frequent guest, John Ramos, since Mark Blankenship was feeling poorly. So it was John and Sarah Talk About Songs. Thank you, John, for filling in. Mark is feeling much better, but I would also like to thank my esteemed colleague and wife, Tara Ariano, for singing us a special one-time theme song because we had to change one of the words. Really appreciate it. It was lovely and completely on point.
Yeah, so, that was funny. Yes.
A new TBS?
Yes, TBS. Show,
thank you. Called People of Earth. Is now airing, and it is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's good.
I watched the first two episodes. I would say that if you are a fan of Last Man on Earth, this show is a very good complement to that, both in tone and structure. It's about a reporter that visits a small town UFO experiencer support group to do kind of a, you know, a little story on, and then it you know, it was he abducted too? And, you know, he sort of becomes part of that group, and weird stuff happens. It's sort of like Last Man on Earth meets like a little Red Dwarf or something like that. There's actually like some sci-fi stuff. There's actually like, it's like Last Man on Earth meets a comedy version of the show V.
Yeah.
You know, there's actual visitors. They have their own agenda. It's sort of like, what was that show with Matthew Perry? The Go On.
Go On, right? Yeah.
So the human part of it is Go On, and the alien part of it is a office workplace comedy.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean, it's all comedy, but there's almost like these two separate things going on so far. I'm sure they start to mesh.
Yeah.
But Wyatt Cenac is the lead.
Has an excellent cast. Anna Gasteyer is the leader of
The actor that was also in Best Friends Forever, who is this like crazy
Luca chump. Jones.
He's great.
Yeah.
I like him a lot. I loved him in Best Friends Forever. Mm-hmm. He's very lovable here.
Yep.
Yeah, if you enjoy sort of like not super haha funny show, but just like smart, humorous. Oh, you know what it reminds me of? Better Off Ted. It has a Better Off Ted vibe to it.
Yeah.
Andy Richter controls the universe. It's sort of like
Also from like Andy Richter controls the universe. Oh, wait, did Conan produce that one? I forget if he did or not. Maybe not. Anyway, this one comes from Conan O'Brien's production company, and it is a better lead into Full Frontal, which comes after it on Monday nights, than let's say a Family Guy rerun, which is what was its lead in before. So yeah, it's very dry. And the parts where they cut away to like people's, like when people are describing the experiences they had, we see them and they're really funny. The three people that the actors that they've hired to play the aliens are really, really, really funny.
Yeah.
They get some very ridiculous stuff to do. So there's a gray and a reptilian and a humanoid who's like a tall, all of the flavors that I learned about from Ancient Aliens is like a tall Slavic looking guy. But yeah, it's great. It's very enjoyable so far. As we record this, episode 3 will air tonight.
Yeah. And the other show just quickly that we watched, Stand Against Evil.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's IFC.
Yeah, it's IFC.
It's sort of like a really kind of slower Ash versus Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Not as gross. The jokes are very hit and miss. I thought the tone was a little weird. But I think you liked it a little bit more than I did, Tara.
I thought it was all right. Yeah, I just like John C. McGinley, I think.
I love John C. McGinley. I think he wasn't good enough to work with.
Yeah.
I feel like he is like kind of a one-note kind of guy. And obviously his character knows more about all the weird demonic happenings that's going on in this town that will probably put him a little more into the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that it came from Dana Gould, who's a really funny comedian.
He created the show. He's an ex-writer on The Simpsons,
too. And great stand-up comedian. I was a little disappointed.
Also thought that I don't understand the point of the daughter character. Is like, why is she such
terrible?
Why is she such a weird, like, simpleton?
Yeah.
She was the worst part of the show.
Totally.
I would love it if she was not part of it anymore.
I agreed. All right, everybody, it is time for the canon. Our guest, Omar, is presenting.
Well, this might be the shortest canon submission ever, since this is an episode of television with almost no dialogue in it whatsoever. BoJack Horseman is a Netflix animated comedy that's in its third season. And the episode I picked is called Fish Out of Water. It's the fourth episode of that third season. And it is almost entirely without dialogue. It all takes place underwater. I guess I'll just go into a brief plot synopsis here. BoJack in this episode is doing publicity, doing the film festival circuit for his Oscar bait biopic Secretariat. His manager insists that he attend the POF, the Pacific Ocean Film Fest, because he's been banned from almost every other film festival out there. And I think we have a clip for that.
The Pacific Ocean Film Fest, or POF, is the biggest underwater film festival in the world. You make a splash there, people are going to notice.
Fine.
All you need to do is get to the premiere on time. 8 o'clock, walk the red carpet, wave at the crowd, kiss some fish babies.
They're so annoying. Sorry, lady, no habla fish talk.
So So there is quite a bit of culture shock that involved in this, because he actually has to get on a submarine and go underwater and walk around with a big fish tank thing on his head. And the other complication is that Kelsey Jannings is going to be at this film festival. She is a director who is on his film secretariat, and he ended up getting her fired through various circumstances. And so things are very awkward between them, and he is dreading running into her at this film festival. She's there with a film called Billie Jean King Is Not My Lover. And so on the way to the film fest, he ends up freaking out on the submarine and has to be sedated. When he wakes up after screaming, you can lead me to water, but you can't. And then he conks out. He ends up at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel and Watermark Theater, where there is a bunch of people around for him to do publicity with. There's a bunch of visual jokes in this episode, but as soon as it gets to it, there's no more dialogue in the entire episode until the very end. He communicates by hand signals and gestures and facial expressions, but largely you're just hearing gurgling and background music for the entire episode. That means there's a lot of visual kind of animation jokes. There's jokes about sardines packed in cars. There's jokes about how he can't drink or smoke underwater. There's a lot of fish-themed puns and jokes on the TV. There's blackfish-ish
yeah.
And naked and filleted playing on his hotel TV. What ends up happening is he tries to make up to Kelsey by writing her these kind of half-assed notes like, you're the Kelseyest. He finally settles on a, sorry, you got fired, that sucks for you. But before he can deliver that note to her in the lobby of this fish hotel, she's gone and he goes after her. And that begins a series of events where Bojack is trying to get to her, but he ends up on a bus carted in by a bunch of sardines. A lot of sardine jokes in this episode. While he's on the bus, which ends up taking him to the middle of nowhere in the ocean floor, he witnesses a male seahorse giving birth to a bunch of baby seahorses. He has a book called What to Expect When You're a Male Seahorse Expecting, which is a thing. and the seahorse ends up giving birth to a bunch of babies. Bojack gets kicked off the bus, but ends up with one of the baby seahorses who tagged along with him. So the whole rest of the episode becomes a mission for Bojack to return this baby to his rightful seahorse dad. But it also becomes kind of a showcase for animation on this show. Bojack Horseman is not an animated show that is known for its stunning animation, but in this episode, it gets to really play around with the format because of the lack of dialogue. It gets to explore all these underwater seascapes that we don't normally see on the show. Bojack gets a crash course on infant parenting with this adorable little orange seahorse that is at first playful, but then ends up crying and hungry, and Bojack has to take care of him. He goes to a convenience store to get some seahorse milk and ends up getting chased out by a shark, but not before buying some fish magazine porn. This leads to a chase sequence and a lot of animated fun where he ends up at a freshwater taffy factory where the seahorse baby's father works. This all sounds like I'm in a fever dream. This really fits in with Dave's illness.
Omar is also high.
All right.
This is a whole real episode of TV. but it all ends up with Bojack returning the baby back to the seahorse's home, but then having this moment where he still kind of feels out of place after having bonded with this baby. He ends up reaching Kelsey and giving her a note of apology, but the letters are all blurred because water. The episode does end on a really strong punchline when Bojack realizes that he could have been talking the whole time. We have a clip for that as well.
Hey, move it, buddy. What are you, deaf? Oh, you have got to be kidding.
So it ends on that realization. I really love this episode because Bojack Horseman, like I said, is not an episode. It's not a show known for its slick animation, and this is one where they really get to play around with that. The show is really more about the jokes and the heartache and the parallels to real-life Hollywood. But in this episode, it feels like it gets to express itself more visually but still manages to resonate with the themes of the show, which is always Bojack trying to fruitlessly connect with other people to try to figure out what he wants out of life and why he can never be happy. It's about Bojack having small bits of growth among his typically selfish, self-destructive acts. And though it's missing some of the key components, like co-stars Aaron Paul, Amy Sedaris, and Alison Brie, by focusing completely on Bojack, it does really get to hone in on his his psyche in the middle of this run of episodes all about Secretariat and the Oscar race. It reminds us of the themes that run through the series, that he really is just a very damaged horse who's trying to find himself, who's trying to connect with other people. There's a sadness that hangs over it, which I know is a recent trend in a lot of sitcoms to kind of have that mix of comedy and drama. But I feel like with BoJack Horseman, it really does work. And it's been like that from the very beginning of the show. I think it's pretty remarkable as a standalone showcase of the show. You don't have to have watched all three seasons of BoJack to appreciate the beauty of this episode and what it brings. And I think it's a good entry point for people who haven't seen it before. I was one of those people that when BoJack started on Netflix, I found it a little wobbly at first. The first two or three episodes did not grab me. It felt like a poor man's Adult Swim show, stretched out too long. But once it really found its footing, I thought it got really strong, and I've enjoyed it ever since. I think it's a very strong Netflix show. I think it's doing stuff that not a lot of the other shows are doing, especially not in animation. And I know this is an unusual pick for the canon, but I think it is a good entry point and a good showcase and a good example of what BoJack Horseman does best, which is to mix comedy and drama and animation in a really unique and entertaining way. So I look forward to hearing what the committee thinks of it.
Omar, I have to say, I always admire that you go with a bold pick. You don't go for the easy ones. This is going to sound like I'm setting you up for a fail. I am not. Past Omar entry canon submissions include the South Park episode about Scott Tenorman, right?
Uh-huh.
Was that
which
the one?
Got, wait,
no,
oh no, it was
that was Dave.
It was Not Without My Anus.
That's right. The All Terrence and Phillip episode, and a Rick and Morty, which about the which the less said the better. But as chance would have it, Dave and I also had the experience of having started to watch BoJack Horseman. And I don't think we even made it through the pilot originally.
No.
That when it
maybe,
first dropped on Netflix.
Yeah. But we had the same reaction, which is it seemed like a poor imitation of something else to start off with.
But
we had Monty on a few weeks ago, and that came up, and I said, you know, does it get better? When does it get better? And he said, yeah, after about four episodes, it hits its stride. And so we thought, well, we're looking for something else to watch. Let's give it a shot.
So like 2 days before you picked this episode for your canon submission, we started watching BoJack Horseman. We skipped right to just episode 6 of season 1. Yep. And that seems to have been a good place to start, because we're almost to the end of season 2 now. In fact, just last night we watched the episode where Kelsey gets fired from the movie. So then we had that background.
Perfect.
For this episode, which we watched first. So yeah, you're right. It's not a typical episode in some ways. And you didn't mention Paul F. Tompkins as Mr. Peanut Butter, but I will, because he's my favorite. He's also not.
Oh, he's the best, but he's not in this episode.
Yeah. Except as a spokesperson for Seahorse Milk, obviously. a lot of the other things that the show does well are on display, both the Hollywood, you know, the hustle part of the story and how he has to go to this weird film festival and, you know, get bossed around by his manager and stuff. And also all of the visual jokes, you know, you mentioned some of them, but like that it really rewards you paying attention. It's not a show that you can really watch while you're like fucking around on your phone, because there's so many visual jokes that just get like crammed into the corners and stuff. And like how many of them are all just like, how many of them are basically just pun jokes, like visual puns on the various animals, like characteristics. So seeing it is remarkable for a show that's, you know, critically acclaimed and gets this such high regard, because a lot of it is just like very silly and corny. And so for that aspect of the show to get transplanted under the ocean was fun, because usually it's, you know, land-based animal jokes. I think you made an excellent case. It's not a typical episode, but it is an interesting standalone. And it was funny to have seen, you know, 5 or 6 episodes of season 1 and then jump ahead to this, because it's so different, but it was such a pleasure to watch and very weirdly soothing. So yeah, good choice, Dave. Let's let Sarah goes last, because I assume she hasn't watched this.
Okay. Yeah, I really enjoyed the show as we started to watch it from, you know, that kind of whatever that was, maybe midpoint of season 1. There's something very sad about the character.
Yes.
Obviously, but, you know, it's somewhere between, you know, feeling like you've peaked or you know, kind of a midlife crisis story, and yet surrounded by other people with all their sort of problems too, right? Like, it's just not the story of, you know, being of a certain age. It's not Horses of a Certain Age, the show. Such great casting in this show. Aaron Paul as Todd.
It's also an executive producer on the show.
Oh, is it? Too. Yeah. I really like. Yeah, this was an interesting episode. Usually, when I come face to face with what I would call a gimmick episode, which I think this sort of is, say, compare this to a Claymation Community episode or, you know, the cartoon world of blah, or South Park goes to Warcraft or something
like
that.
Angel has Muppets.
Yeah. Those shows' episodes tend to bug the shit out of me because I usually think they're very lazy. This episode I didn't think was very lazy. I thought it was really well done. I thought it was where other shows are a study about the medium that they change to or the gimmick that they have chosen. Like, this really kind of felt like they were using their time inside of a speechless bubble to get a, like, solving one of BoJack's character flaws, or at least examining it, right? That he's this narcissistic guy who can't really open up, and his life is, troubles are compounded by it. And there was something very touching about how they approach that in this episode, whereas maybe some other gimmicky episode, they don't really do that. It's like, well, isn't it fun that Troy and Abbott are clay dudes? That's pretty funny. Look, the three on their eyes bulged out, and that's great. I was thinking, is there any other voiceless episode beside Hush?
Yeah, that was the only other one I could think of offhand.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I really did enjoy this episode quite a bit. I enjoyed the show quite a bit. I'm kind of glad I did watch some episodes before I saw this one. I don't know if this would be the one I would pick to go straight into it. So I'm curious if, Sarah, if this is your first foray into the show, what you thought of it. Before I just throw it, I just want to say this show has one of my favorite credit sequences of the last few years. There's something really fun about it.
Yeah, I watch it every time, and normally,
yeah, we don't fast forward through it. It's one of, yeah, you know,
people, not just not fast forward, like, I pay attention to it every time.
Yeah, and it changes between seasons too, I notice it.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this had a different closing song than it usually does, but I always listen to the song at the end too.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was a smart and thoughtful episode. Sarah.
I really liked it too. I loved all the sight gags, like that the porn mag is called Masturbate, B-A-I-T. There was a ton of stuff about that. Like, he inadvertently offends the local, you know, Ixians by giving them a thumbs up. And then that's, like, in the crawl of their Times Square later. Like, and they're keeping callbacks to that.
Yeah.
It's built really well. And the fact that there's not dialogue, I know I always refer to Samurai Jack, but there's frequently not that much dialogue in.
Oh, yeah.
That either.
Yeah.
Yep.
And their way of, like, texturizing sound, like, there is dialogue. We just don't understand any of it because we don't speak fish. And I thought the sound design was really beautiful. Like, there was that weird, like, sort of not K-poppy, but, like, there was this, like, Tokyo feel to the sound, and it sort of sounded like you were in an arcade. Yeah. And the murmuring of the other fish.
And the commercial that Mr. Peanut Butter in was obviously, him doing foreign commercials for extra cash.
Yeah. Him doing, like, whatever, Maybelline Japan.
Right.
Or whatever that we never see them here, but that's how Madonna makes most of her money. But there was also, like, I was impressed by, because I don't watch the show, but I know about the show. And, I know that it does have those comedy and drama elements that Omar was talking about. And I was impressed by this, like, the ability to, like, balance some rueful parts of it and just this feeling of, like, yes, the underwater episode is an excuse to, like, do a lot of sight gags and explore a different world, but it also kind of got at that alienation that you can sometimes feel when you're in a city that is not your own, and that you're surrounded by people but also at a distance from them in your little, like, head bubble that you don't know how to operate. So I thought that was an image that worked on a bunch of levels. Plus, not for nothing, that little seahorse and its little
so
butt.
Cute.
Really cute.
Yes.
But also that scene at the end when, like, he's like, bye, and the little seahorse is just, like, poking itself in the eye with a spoon and doesn't notice. And it's like, well, that's kids for you.
Yep.
I don't know. I thought it was good. Like, it wasn't. And it also wasn't, like, in love with itself. Like, it had this thing that it set out to do, and it did it, and it happened to be 25 minutes, but it was pretty to look at, and I laughed, and I didn't cry. It was definitely better than Cats. yeah, I don't know. And, like, another thing that we always talk about when it comes to if something is canon-worthy is, like, did you want to keep going? Like, when Netflix is like, watch next episode, did you want to keep going? And I did, so I think we should vote.
All right. Just one thing before we vote, as a point of clarity, because I don't think we mentioned it. The last clip was him meeting a guy in the street
who
was using
human.
A button on his helmet that Bojack never realized was there to talk.
Yep.
So that was the
he's like, click.
The grand
what?
Setup for the end joke. Yeah. The show is really good at ending episodes, too. That's a good. It's like Key and Peele in that way. They know when to end it, you know, and go into it.
So. Sarah, I think you might like this show for its corny elements as well as like the emotional ones, because there's a lot of very dad jokey humor that while we were watching, I was like, oh, Sarah would like this.
All right, let's put it to a vote. Tara Ariano?
Yes, I vote yay.
Sarah D. Bunting?
I also vote yay.
Me too.
Yay!
BoJack Horseman, Season 3, Episode 4, Fish Out of Water. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has a winner.
The winner is baseball in general. this last series went to 7 games. It was very dramatic. And because it featured 2 franchises that had not won either of them in a very long time, this notched baseball's highest ratings in 25 years. Good job, Fox.
Wow.
Too bad your show about baseball still kind of sucks.
Loser?
Yes. I have the loser of the week, Bill Simmons. Before I say why. He was the creator and editor of Grantland, which employed me as a freelancer for a long time, and they were very good to me and they paid very nicely, and this was not a show for me and I never watched it, but any given Wednesday his HBO talk show has been canceled. It feels like it's only been a few months since it premiered for a weekly show, and for it to be HBO, it's really not great for him, because usually they tend to give things more leeway to find their audience, but I understand he is a divisive figure for people who enjoy sports. Sarah, would you say that is true?
Yes, he is. I did watch the show, and he does have things that he's good at, but for whatever reason, like, on-camera hosting is not his thing. And I do actually feel like they could have given this a little more time, but they didn't. Like, maybe he just needs to go to, like, host school, but I mean, apparently his podcast, he doesn't do any on sports I care about, but apparently he's okay. Like,
people like them.
He's a smart guy. He has a lot of good ideas that, you know, he invented 30 for 30, which total respect for that, but being an on-camera personality is maybe not for him.
If they do give him another chance there or somewhere else, they really have to do the skit where he is in that Louis C.K. episode with David Lynch to go in to get trained.
Anyway, sorry, Bill. I think you'll be okay, though.
Speaking about David Lynch, you know what time it is?
Blue Velvet time?
Sure. Time to cut off veneer and look at the ants. I mean, it's game time.
Oh, my God.
Paps, Blue Ribbon. All right, everybody, this is the 9th game time of the season.
Oh, my God.
Sarah D. Bunting stands on the precipice of her first season win with 4 points.
I'm so excited.
Sarah and valued guest tied at 2 points. Me.
No, I'm Tara. Tara and valued guest tied at two points.
I was about to remark how dizzy and high I am right now.
Oh, this will be a shit.
Tara and valued guest tied at 2 points. Today's game time comes from some guy named Joe Reed.
Joe!
Joe.
Earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing, which, as I said, I believe will return next week.
Yes.
Joe writes, rules of this one are pretty straightforward. You give them the names, that's me, Dave, give them the names of two actors who played someone's parents on a TV show.
Does this game have a name?
Yeah. Showbiz Mom and Dads.
Okay, proceed.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
They answer, number one, the name of the actor who played their child.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
Two, the name of the character. All right?
Okay.
Three, the TV show.
Okay.
So you got 3 point possibilities for every question I will ask you.
All right.
You can ask for a hint. You can ask for any one of the unknown things.
Okay.
And then you can guess the remaining two.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
Note number one, says Joe, just the first name of a character is fine with him, so it's fine with me.
Okay.
Number two, if there are multiple children, player can go with any one of them.
Okay.
Make sense?
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
All right. Sir. Let's throw it to the person in control choosing initiative, otherwise known as Pinky 3000.
We will start with valued guests.
All right. So that means we're going to go Omar, Sarah, Tara. Are we ready to play Showbiz Mom and Dads?
Good luck, Sarah and Omar, but especially Sarah.
Oh, God. Thanks.
Omar.
No.
All right. As a reminder, I am reading you actor parents. Edward Herman and Kelly Bishop. Give me the actor child's name. I mean,
The child. Go ahead, Omar. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, you know. You're
doing. I think I know what I'm doing. Okay. Lorelai Gilmore, Lauren Graham, Gilmore
Thank
Girls.
You. 3 points. This is good as going to be. Guys, contestants, listeners, manufacturers of pharmaceuticals across the nation, this is going to be a long game.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting, Kyle Chandler, and Connie Britton.
Actor who played their child is named Amy Teagarden. The character was Julie Taylor, and they were all on Friday Night Lights.
You, ma'am, have 3 points, Tara Ariano.
Yes, sir.
Peter Gallagher and Kelly Rowan.
Their kid was Seth Cohen, played by, oh my God, his name has fallen out of my head. It's the OC. And his name is Adam. I can't remember.
You're correct.
Adam.
Oh, wait. He said first names are okay. So you just got it, I guess.
I think that was just for the character name. Not for the actor.
Oh, that was the actor.
Yes.
Oh,
okay. No, I don't. I forget his last name.
Brody. Adam.
Brody.
Oh,
all right.
God.
So that was 2 points.
Brody's.
Yeah, always 2 points. 2 points.
Got to respect the rules.
Yep.
Back to Omar. Elaine Stritch and Alan Alda.
Oh dear! Is that 30 Rock? Alec Baldwin? Oh shit!
Just the first name is
Jack Donaghy.
There you go. 3 points. Well done.
Good job.
Worked it backwards. Sarah D. Bunting, Swoozie Kurtz, and Kevin Tighe.
Yeah, I think that's how his name is spelled. Yep. Pronounced.
That's T-I-G-H-E.
Tighe.
Oh.
Jesus. Can I ask for any of the three?
Yeah.
All right. Can I have the character name, please?
Character name is John Locke.
Weird.
John Locke
the
with an E.
Character name is John Locke. Okay. That will be lost. And he is played by Terry O'Quinn.
Oh, correct. Nice ball.
Of Secrets and Lies. Boo.
All right, Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Kate Burton and Jeff Perry.
The child is Meredith Grey. The actress is Ellen Pompeo. And the show is Grey's Anatomy.
3 points.
Mr. Kaczynski plays her dad?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yep.
Barney Martin and Liz Sheridan for Omar.
Say those again.
Barney Martin and Liz Sheridan.
Oh, geez. Can I get the name of the show?
Yeah, sure. Seinfeld.
Oh, is it Jerry Seinfeld?
Played by
Jerry. Jerry Seinfeld.
Correct for 2 points. That was a good question to ask for a clue on.
Yep.
Josh Taylor for Sarah. Josh Taylor and Stephanie Beecham.
Oh, boy. Okay. That is Dylan McKay's parents, played by Luke Perry, on Beverly Hills 90210.
Ding, ding.
Tari Ariano, yes. Jeff Goldblum, and Brian Stokes Mitchell.
Is this Glee? Okay. Is it Lea Michele? And her character's name was...
Her name is fine.
Oh, no. It's been so long. I can't remember her character's name.
Rachel.
All
right. Omar. Annette O'Toole and John Schneider.
Oh, picky.
Joe.
Smallville. Tom Welling. Clark Kent.
Thanks, Picky. All right. Thank you, Picky. Sarah D. Bunting, Becky Ann Baker, and Dylan Baker.
Hmm.
What?
I think I was supposed to get this one.
Yeah. Probably. Could I have the character name, please?
Character name? Karen Cartwright.
That does not help.
No. I think the show name would have helped you more.
Yeah, probably.
No clue?
Will and Grace?
Good guess.
Yeah. I don't know.
Tara?
That's, I forget the actress's name now too. Catherine McPhee on Smash.
That's correct. All right, Tara. Okay. Marlo Thomas and Ron Liebman.
Oh boy. This is Rachel Green, played by Jennifer Aniston on Friends.
Correct. Back to Omar. Becky Ann Baker and Peter Scolari.
I believe that is Girls. Hannah Horvath, played by Lena Dunham.
You have 3 points.
Will we hit the Becky Ann Baker trifecta in this game?
Joe Morton and Candy Alexander. This is for Sarah.
Joe Morton and Candy Alexander play on Scandal. The parents of, oh my God, the parents of all of these names have completely drained from my head.
What about the actor?
First name is fine for the character.
You know the actor.
Kerry Washington is the actor.
Nice.
Olivia.
Yeah, phew. Oh.
I just was like, Olivia Benson. No, that's not right.
Ugh. Not Benson. No. Tari Ariano.
Yes.
Veronica Cartwright and Beau Bridges.
They are the parents of Jack McFarlane, played by Sean Hayes, on Will and Grace.
Correct. Back to Omar. This is your last question before a score break. Kathy Bates and Michael Chiklis.
Hmm. Oh, dear.
Oh, I just can't remember.
Let me get the show.
Yeah, the show is American Horror Story Freak Show.
Oh, hell.
good luck on the name, but maybe the character, maybe the actor.
I'm just going to say Sarah Paulson.
Good guess.
Anyone else?
Yeah, usually a safe guess.
Jimmy Darlin, Evan Peters. That was a tough one.
I would not have gotten that.
All right, number 17.
Ready to go.
Ready to go.
For Sarah D. Bunting, Bryan Cranston and Anna Gunn.
Okay. That show is Breaking Bad. The character's name is Walter White Jr.
I'll give you a day point for the other name he uses.
Flynn?
Yes!
Good one.
I'll take
a
date.
The actor?
Point. Oh my God. RJ Mitta?
Yeah.
Nice. Oh,
good one.
Pretty fucking good.
Well done.
I mean, all right. I'm dizzy now.
After this, we'll have our first score break. Tari Ariano, Francis Conroy, and John Lithgow.
They are the parents of Barney Stinson, played by Neil Patrick Harris, on How I Met Your Mother.
And that is good for 3 points. And that is first score breakdown.
Very close game. Omar and Sarah are tied with 14 points each. I have 16.
Okay. So that means we're back to Omar. Betty Buckley and Kevin Conway.
Ooh.
That's not an easy one. Let me give you a hint, Omar.
Sure.
Not a show that you would really identify families with. You wouldn't think there'd be a lot of families in here.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Really, Dave?
It obviously didn't
I'm
help.
Need the show.
What? Sorry, what was that, Omar?
I'm going to need the show. Okay.
The show is Oz.
Oh, God.
What were the actors again?
Betty Buckley, Kevin Conway.
Was it Beecher?
Well,
nope.
Dean Winters. That's not Beecher.
No, that's not.
Oh, sorry, that was the actor. Ryan O'Reilly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, Paul Johansson, and Moira Kelly.
Oh, geez. Okay. I think the show is One Tree Hill.
Nice.
And the character who played their kid is Chad Michael Murray?
Nice.
Whatever happened to that guy? More importantly, whatever happened to my memory of his character's name, of which I have none? Arnie.
No, Lucas Scott. Lucas Scott. All right, Tara.
Yep.
Kyle MacLachlan.
Mm-hmm.
And Deacon, D-I-C-H-E-N, Lachman.
Deacon Lachman?
Yeah, sure.
I do not know. Show.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No idea. Wait. Is it Chloe? Is that her name? The character's name? I forget her name.
Chloe Bennett is the actor's name.
Dang it.
Sky/Daisy.
Sky/Daisy.
Slash something else now. Quake or something like
Who
that.
Who cares?
All yeah. right. Omar.
Exactly.
Gretchen Mol and Dabney Coleman.
Oh, gross.
Okay. That is Boardwalk Empire. And that is Jimmy.
Played by.
Oh, God. Hedwig, dude. Michael. Oh, God. It's
Pitt. Yeah!
Nice.
Best
thing you ever did for anybody.
Yeah.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I was thinking Dunn. Michael Dunn. No.
That's a different guy.
Dean Norris and Sherry Stringfield. Dean Norris and Sherry Stringfield.
Sherry Stringfield.
Uh-huh.
I have a feeling I know what this is, but all right. Could I have the show, please?
At no point in your rambling, incoherent response
were
you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now
Domer.
Domer.
To it.
Under the dome.
Yes, thanks. Thanks for that. I could draw that little fuckwad. Oh, what was his character's name? I don't remember. I don't know. Fucking dome.
All right, but Tara?
Well, it's Junior.
Yeah.
James Junior.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the actor's name.
Alexander Koch?
Of course.
Yeah.
I think it's the other Koch.
The other Koch brother.
Crotch. Okay.
Ruining America.
Tara Ariano,
yes.
Courtney Cox, and Brian Van Holt.
Okay. They are from Cougar Town. They are the parents of Travis, who was played by Dan Bird?
Ooh, spell nice Bird.
B-Y-R-D.
Very good. You get wine. Dave Point.
That's
okay. Susie Essman and Bob Balaban, Omar.
That is Broad City. Nice. And it is why can't I think of their names? This is painful. I know their names.
Think of the actor's name, because I think they might be the same. First names, anyways.
Oh, Alana. Alana.
That's good for the character, but not for the actor.
Okay, Alana. Okay, well, 2 out of 3 is not bad.
Glazer,
yeah.
Alana Glazer.
Oh. All right, Sarah D. Bunting, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Rob Reiner.
Oh.
Character name, please.
Character name is Jessica Day.
AKA
Christ. New Girl. Oh, okay.
And you need
Deschanel, the one that's not boned. Zoe. Thank you.
Yeah.
Nice. Way to work it backwards. You really asked for the right backwards. Clue on that one.
Jean Smart.
Yep.
And brother of Nora Dunn, Kevin Dunn. Tara, as you informed me not so long ago.
Mm-hmm. I believe this is Samantha who? Okay.
Wow.
So that's Christina Applegate, and she played Samantha.
Correct.
Who?
Newly.
That's right.
Omar Gallega, Michelle Forbes, and Brent Sexton.
I have no idea. What show is that?
You want the show?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The show is The Killing. Or as we like to call it here.
Is the actress name Michelle Enos?
Katie Finley.
Yeah, they're the parents of the dead girl.
Yeah.
Oh,
any idea that was going to be character?
Star Trek
now,
Next
think about the character's name, because if you can think about the ad at the time, you might get the first name, which is all you
Oh, Rosie, whatever.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh,
1 point.
I didn't know we're still on. Okay. Yep.
Okay. It was 1 point. Sarah D. Bunting, Sarah Paulson, and Zachary Quinto. Sarah Paulson.
Uh-huh.
And Spock.
Uh-huh. I'm really tempted to say the slab, but I'm not going to.
Could I
get the character name, please?
All right. This is a good clue, because the character name will net you 2 pieces of information.
Oh.
The character is Johnny Morgan or Bloody Face.
Bloody Face.
Yeah. So do you know
is
the
this-
show...
American Horror Story also Freak Show?
No.
I think you should give it to her. It's not Freak Show, but it's American Horror Story. How granular are you supposed to get?
I don't know. Well,
it's the right show.
That's true. I guess it's the same show, isn't it? Okay, all right.
Unless Omar objects, I think it's okay to give her a
No, I think
she'll
get
it. Okay, all right, okay. And actor?
And my guess for the actor is Finn Wittrock.
Dylan McDermott.
From Asylum.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Famed violinist.
No, that's no, the other one.
It's the other one.
Dermot Moroney is the cellist,
Moroney.
Not a violinist.
I was close.
Sorry.
Oh, boy. God.
We'll do just that.
Okay.
Tari Ariano. Gene Stapleton. I think it's supposed to be Stapleton, isn't it?
Okay.
And Carol O'Connor.
Okay. They are from All in the Family.
Maybe.
They are the parents of... Gloria, who was played by Sally Struthers.
3 points.
Nicely
Omar,
done.
Harry Hamlin, mm-hmm. and Lisa Rinna.
Oh.
Arhama. A little rough.
What the hell show were they on? I'll have to get the show.
The show? The show is Veronica Mars.
Oh, Duncan? Oh, wrong one. The other dude.
You got the actor, I guess, that you can still guess.
Yeah, you can guess the actor's name.
I'm not going to get it, but I knew I could see his face.
Jason Doering and was the actor. Logan Eccles was the character you're looking for.
Dang it.
All right, Sarah, Ben Vereen and Vereen Watson Johnson.
What?
Ben Vereen and Vereen. Ben Vereen and Vernie. Sorry, misreading that. Ben Vereen and Vernie Watson Johnson.
Could I get the character name, please?
Jesus. That took a year off my life. The character's name, and I assure you I read this correctly, even though I'm about to pass out, is Will Smith.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Actor?
Nice.
Will Smith?
No, that's right.
Like, wow, really?
All right, bring us into our second score break.
There is another Will Smith who's a writer and also starred on The Thick of It, who is a white gentleman. He was the nerdy conservative guy in The Thick of It.
Morgan Fairchild and Kathleen Turner.
That they are the parents of Chandler, played by Matthew Perry, on Friends.
You are correct. Score break. That was 33 of 54.
Still quite close. Omar has 20. Sarah has 21. I have 28.
Okay. So I've collected all of Joe's questions that have possible alternative answers from now to the end of the game.
Exciting.
And this is how it works. You don't guess the extra ones, but basically they're like a difficulty bonus. So if you go for the difficulty bonus straight out instead of the easy answer, you can gain bonus points based on how hard Joe thinks that answer was.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
So you're still only answering one thing for each of those. But if you match Joe's secret answer, you get bonus points.
Okay.
Got it.
Omar, Martin Sheen and Jane Fonda. Martin Sheen.
Is that Grace and Frankie? Yep.
Nice.
And we're looking now for the character name?
You need character and actor still.
But they have more than one kid.
Yes, there's more than one possible answer.
Oh, the kids.
But you just give one answer, and if you match Joe, you get bonus points.
Actor or character?
Either. You still got a pair of together, but, you know.
One of them is Baron Vaughn, the actor?
He's the kid of the other couple.
Yeah.
Brianna
Hansen is June Diane Raphael. Or for a bonus point, you could have said Mallory Hansen, who's played by Brooklyn Decker. All right.
Oh, okay.
But you didn't.
Sarah D. Bunting, Elliot Gould, and Christina Pickles. Elliot Gould and Christina Pickles.
Oh, God. Character name, please.
Monica Geller.
Ah, fuck.
Friends.
Different strokes.
Different
and the actress?
Strokes. Should I guess the other kid?
No,
to see if
you're locked out of that now.
Oh, I am? Okay. Yeah. That is Courtney Cox, Arquette.
I'm only giving you the bonus points if you get both of those as your answers. Tara Ariano, Grace Zabriskie, and Bruce Dern.
Okay, they're from Big Love. And they're the... So I'm supposed to try and identify the less known person?
You're supposed to answer whatever you want. If you match Joe's special answers, you get extra points.
All right. Well, I can't remember the other guy's name, so I'll just say Bill Paxton, and he played Bill Henriksen.
You are correct. The bonus
the other guy
answer
is Sean
Doyle.
Doyle! Shit.
Played Joey.
Right. I never would have guessed Joey anyway.
And that was worth three bonus
Dang.
Points. Omar, Carol Burnett, and Carol O'Connor. Carol Burnett and Carol O'Connor.
I need the show for that.
Mad About You.
Is that Jamie? And that's Helen Hunt.
That is good. 2 points.
Just
well
a
done.
Pedantic note, 3 different sets of actors played Jamie's parents over the course of the season. Those were just the ones who played them at the last. Just saying.
What were the bonuses on that?
Her sister.
Yeah, Lisa Stimple and Ramsey.
Yep.
Yes. Okay, back to the game for Sarah. Blythe Danner and Sydney Pollack.
Can I have the show?
Will and Grace.
God damn it. Grace? What?
The other one.
Still got the actor you can get a point on.
Yeah.
Which other one?
Oh, sorry.
I don't know.
Another one.
I don't know.
Eric McCormick, who played Will.
And who does he have in for the brothers?
Sam Truman, played by?
Well, he was played variously by John Slattery. Stephen Weber.
Yeah.
He was played by Stephen Weber later.
All right.
Does he mention John Tenney, the other brother?
He does not.
Joe!
Tara Ariano.
Yes.
Christopher McDonald.
Uh-huh.
And Julie Haggerty.
Show?
Happy Endings.
Oh. Okay. Alicia Cuthbert as Alex.
That's good for one bonus point as well. That was his bonus answer. Jane Kirkovich was his regular answer. So that is worth 3 points for that question.
Cool.
Omar, Kelly Rutherford and William Baldwin. Kelly Rutherford and William Baldwin.
Let me get the actor name.
The actor name is Blake Lively.
Is that Gossip Girl?
And do you know the character?
Gossip Girl? I don't know. I have no idea.
Wasn't Gossip Girl a guy?
Do not watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stupidly.
Serena Vanderwoodson.
Yeah, if you say so.
Mm-hmm. Too many.
Too many
syllables. Names there.
Yes, I agree.
Serenity Bunting, Tom Bosley. Is it Bosley or Bosley?
Bosley.
Bosley and Marion Ross.
Oh, God. Okay. I was about to say Happy Endings. No. Happy Days.
Happy Days.
They played the parents of Richie Cunningham, played by Ron Howard.
Correct. Your bonus answer was Joni, played by Aaron Moran.
Moran, I think.
Yeah, what a Moran.
Yeah.
I am for getting that wrong. That was worth 2 points, but you didn't get that one. Becky Ann Baker and Joe Flattery.
Flaherty?
There it is.
Flaherty. No T in there.
Trifecta.
Nope.
Flattery.
It's at the end. Okay, Freaks and Geeks.
Drugs.
Shut up. Freaks and Geeks. Okay, I'm going to guess that Joe thinks the more obscure one is John Francis Daly as Sam.
You are correct for an extra point. 4 points. Oh, wait. Those 4 points.
Sweet.
Omar, Joanna Cassidy and Robert Foxworth. Joanna Cassidy and Robbie Bobby Foxworth.
So sorry, Sarah.
Damn it.
I need
the show. The show is 6 feet under.
Sarah's having a stroke on me.
Oh, that was Brenda and her brother.
Wait, what was your answer? Was your answer Brenda?
It was Brenda.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did say Brenda.
The actor?
Played by
the person known as the following.
The Australian actress.
Who is?
Can't.
Rachel Griffiths.
Griffith, damn it. Yes.
Sarah. Lauren Graham and John Corbett.
Corbett.
That's Parenthood.
It is.
I forget the fucking annoying son's name. I'm actually not sure I remember the daughter's name. Let's go with Amber.
Yeah.
Played by Mae Whitman?
Her? 3 points. All right, bring us into our penultimate score break for Tara.
Yep.
Mary Steenburgen and Joe Mantegna.
Mantegna. Okay, they're from Joan of Arcadia.
Yes.
I don't remember the other characters' names, so I have to go with Joan, played by Amber Tamblyn.
3 points. Kevin.
Jason Ritter.
All right. Let's hear the scores. That was
by some guy.
45. Everybody's got 3 questions left.
Okay. Omar has 25 points. Sarah has 29 points. I have 41 points.
Omar and
I feel like I could still win this.
Archer and Stephen Collins.
Ooh. Oh, is that? Oh my God, are there like a million kids on the show? Is it Seventh Heaven? Oh, Everwood? No. I'm out of guesses. I have no idea. What is that?
Anybody?
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah. And so Dennis or D?
Yeah. Does he think D is more obscure?
Yes.
I figured.
Yeah, I think he gives it. D is his favorite character, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, she gets the bonus point, sure. I think.
Would it? Oh, never mind. Right. I was going to say Danny DeVito as one of the parents.
He's not really, though. Not biological. Yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne and Jennifer Lewis. This is for Sarah.
Lawrence Fishburne and Jennifer Lewis.
Yes.
Can I have the show, please?
Blackish.
I don't watch Blackish. Anthony Anderson?
Nice.
Best I can do. Move on.
Played Dre. He plays Dre.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah. 3 point was Rhonda Johnson, Raven Simone.
Right.
Okay. Dan Loria and Allie Mills.
Okay. They're the parents on The Wonder Years. And I'm going to... who would he have put in? Did he put in both of the other kids? Can you not answer that?
What do you mean?
Well, there are 3 kids.
There's only one alternate answer.
Okay. I will guess Jason Hervey as Wayne.
Wow. Hey! That was a 3-point bonus.
What?
Yeah, I don't make up the rules.
Thanks, Joe. This is...
Joe knows this stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Joe.
Omar. Judith Light and Alan Dale.
Is this Who's the Boss?
That's a good guess. Not correct. Any idea after that? That's a lot of dots you got to connect here, though. Yeah.
No, it's not transparent, so no, I don't know.
Anybody?
No.
That's Ugly Betty.
Oh, right.
It's Daniel Mead, played by Mabus. Mabius.
Yeah.
There is the theory of the Mabius, a loop in the fabric of never mind.
Okay.
All right.
Ancient alien theorists say yes.
Estelle Parsons and John Randolph, and this is for Sarah. Hang on a sec. Is the game over?
I don't know how many questions are left.
Hold on, because like, I sat through a Norman Lear documentary last week, so I know the answer to this shit.
Okay, but wait, hold on.
What? Let Sarah, what?
Mathematically, how many are you leading by?
Like 17.
Okay. I'm going to give you some clues.
Sarah, she says she knows.
All right. There is a good chance that one of our past guests has masturbated to something in this.
Right now. I'm sorry.
No. That's not how the story went at all.
Okay. Please answer. Sarah D. Bundy.
You know what? I was thinking of a totally different show. Oh, God. I also don't remember exactly which show that different stroke might have occurred to. have a character name, please.
We'll do just that.
All right. D, Let me give you another answer. There's one word that is the same in every answer here.
Yeah.
You could give the same word and get 3 points.
I could give the same word.
It's also a show you've already mentioned in this episode.
Yep.
That's Seinfeld.
Also,
it?
Famous for a baseball antic.
The actor was.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know.
Okay, here's a clue. I'm going to give you a clue. And then you have to guess the same thing for the other two answers. Roseanne.
Is it Roseanne?
And?
And Roseanne.
Yeah! Jackie was your one bonus answer.
Ah, sure.
Okay. All right. Treat Williams and Brenda Strong, Tara.
Okay, this is Everwood.
And this is indeed Everwood.
I will never remember the girl's name, so I'll say Ephraim, who is played by Gregory Smith.
That is good for 3 points. Delia?
Delia, but I can remember her at the, I mean, I didn't remember.
She had some old lady named like Evelyn, didn't she?
It's Italian, I remember that.
Vivian Cardone or
yeah.
Cardone.
Yeah, we were both right.
Everybody's last question coming up.
Okay.
Omar, God, Nancy end. Walker, and Harold Gould.
Wow.
Deep cut. Deep cut.
Yeah.
Kid twist. Holy shit.
Is this...
Can ask for a clue.
One Day at a Time?
It's not.
You're in the right era, though.
Yeah.
Different Nancy.
Now you're stuck at a blind stab. No, yeah. Anybody?
Rhoda?
This is Rhoda, yeah. Character Rhoda. Actor?
Julie Kavner as Brenda? Is that the bonus question?
Well, the actor in question for those was Valerie Harper.
Right.
And Brenda and Julie Kavner was your 2 point bonus answer.
Right.
Sarah D. Bunting, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, and Samantha Smith.
Huh. Shit. Show.
Supernatural. TV's longest running program. Started in 1901.
Etc.
They did that episode in their seventh year when the Cubs won the World Series, thanks to ghosts. And they're still going strong.
Yeah. The episode was actually etched into a wax tablet.
It was one of those Odeon.
Yes, a Nickelodeon. Yeah. It's Sam and Dean Winchester.
Yeah.
And I don't remember Sam's name, only his floppy hair, and Dean is played by... fuck. I don't remember his name.
Well, you got 1 point there.
Jensen Ackles.
Jensen Ackles, yes! Was Dean. Sam Winchester is Jared
Padalecki.
Padalecki.
Oh, right, of course.
Last question of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Tara Ariano, Ed O'Neill, and Shelley Long.
Okay, they're from Modern Family. And I'm going to say his more obscure one is probably Jesse Tyler Ferguson as Mitchell.
So that you could avoid saying...
Julie Bowen!
Correct, and that's good for 1 bonus point. So, let's hear
good
the final
job,
scores.
Tara.
Thanks.
Wow.
All right, Omar had 25, Sarah had 33, I had 40, 54.
Okay, so time thanks, for the shits Joe. And giggles. All right?
Yes.
I'm mixing it up this week. First person to shout out the answer and get it right will get a steel meal.
Oh.
Steel meals are back. All right? I'm going to read the parents very quickly. First person to say any of the answers... wins the steel meal. Tara Ariano, are you ready and locked in?
Yeah.
Omar, are you ready and locked in?
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting, ready and locked in?
Yep.
Doris Roberts and Peter Boyle.
Raymond.
Raymond is correct.
Good job.
Everybody loves Raymond. Ray Romano, Raymond Barone. Value guests now have a steel meal. Could come in quite handy. But in the meantime, congratulations, Tara Ariano.
We will start with Tara.
Oh, I pressed the wrong one.
Drugs!
Oh, God.
Can't even go back to bed. There's so much laundry on it right now.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We sketched out our impressions of Saturday Night Live's seasons present and past before the blotter presented yet more JonBenet programming. The gang went around the dial with stops at Ancient Aliens, Planet Earth 2. Thank God, guys, we got a backup. We got a backup. I'm gonna take a breather for a second. The Crown and People of Earth. Omar successfully pitched that.
You're gonna run out of outro song.
Successfully pitched BoJack Horseman, the one with the fish and stuff, and there's winner losers, and Tara was a winner of this week. Remember,
we're listening.
Oh God.
Oh no.
I am David Teagle, and on behalf of Tara Arrieta.
Yeah.
Sarah D. Bunte,
get to know me.
And Omar Gallega.
I got to be honest, guys. I'm going to need more cowbell.
Oh, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Right here on Extra Hot Great.
No matter what size you are, you'll still feel chunk. No, we're the only store that accepts your unique body.
Unique?
And try our tween girls department. Lil?
No. I don't know what's going on. Chunk, chunk,
chunk. This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.